morning. It's Thursday, December 19th. I'm Shmita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, why some colleges are offering free tuition to a broader swath of students. Trump comes out strongly against a bipartisan bill to prevent a government shutdown at the end of the week. And the messy, lucrative business of breakups. But first, TikTok has just 1 month left to respond to an ultimatum from Congress. Either sell to an approved buyer and divest from its China-based parent company, ByteDance, or be banned in the U.S. For the tens of millions of American users, it could be the end of an era for the app, which has built a reputation for curating seemingly tailor-made content just for you. Here's how Lauren Feiner at The Verge put it.
A lot of people feel like the algorithm knows what they want to see, has like just the right amount of randomness to keep them interested. And that's really powerful.
Lawmakers have warned for a long time that the app poses national security risks, citing policies in China that allow the government to secretly request data from companies and citizens, which TikTok claims has never happened to them. Forbes says they experienced TikTok's far-reaching ability to spy on users firsthand when the app improperly gained access to some of their journalists' IP addresses and user data. Those reporters were tracked as part of a covert surveillance campaign. ByteDance confirmed that it happened and fired the employees responsible. It was a real-life example of what lawmakers have warned against. But Feiner told us, despite that, a lot of TikTok users are confused about why a law banning the app is necessary, in part because U.S. officials never publicly provided evidence to support their concerns.
Lawmakers got to see all of this classified information, but the general public really hasn't seen the same information. And I think that's really made a lot of people question, well, you know, how dangerous is this app? And why can't the government explain to us why this bill needs to be in place to protect us?
TikTok's battle to defend itself hasn't gone well so far. An appellate court earlier this month upheld the law, basically saying national security trumps all other issues. But they were thrown a lifeline yesterday by the Supreme Court, which announced it will hear arguments over the constitutionality of the law next month.
Specifically, they want to know whether the bill violates the First Amendment.
Legal experts told NPR forcing a shutdown over unspecified threats, in their opinion, would violate the First Amendment. The Supreme Court will hear TikTok's argument on January 10th. January 19th is the deadline for TikTok to sell. And one day later, on January 20th, adding another layer of complication to this story, President-elect Donald Trump will take office. What'll happen to TikTok under the Trump presidency is a little unknown. Lately, he told reporters he has a, quote, warm spot for the app. He hosted the app's CEO at Mar-a-Lago this week. That's quite the turnaround from his first term, when Trump tried unsuccessfully to ban TikTok through an executive order. Feiner told us he might try to influence what happens next with the app.
Does he mean he'll just try to facilitate a sale of TikTok? Or does he mean he would literally try to stop the law, perhaps by telling his Department of Justice not to enforce it? I think we don't totally know what he's thinking right now, but there's kind of a limited amount that Trump can do, given that this bill passed into law and so far has been upheld by the courts.
If TikTok is banned, the impact will be noticeable right away. For one, internet service providers in the U.S. will be required to block TikTok from web browsers, also app stores.
It's really going to fall to companies like Apple and Google that run app store marketplaces to stop updating the app. So you might be able to use it in the short term, but over time, it will increasingly decrease in quality.
Now to a trend in higher education. This fall, the University of Pennsylvania and MIT announced that they're offering free tuition to students from families making up to $200,000 a year. Colleges have been offering tuition breaks for low-income families for decades, but now more and more schools are aiming at a broader group, the middle class. Washington Post higher ed reporter Danielle Douglas-Gabriel told us why.
what we're really seeing is colleges signaling to people a little further up the income stream that are not what you'd consider low income, and therefore would not necessarily qualify for a lot of the federal and state need-based aid policies, saying to them that, hey, you can go here and you can afford this.
She says against the backdrop of crushing student debt and fewer high school graduates enrolling in college, these new announcements are a play for colleges to stand out.
We have what's known as the demographic cliff, what essentially means that there are just going to be fewer high school grads to fill the seats of the many colleges that we have in this country, over 4,000, right? So if you're trying to be competitive for those students, you have to let them know that they can afford to go here.
Douglas Gabriel also points out most students don't end up paying the full tuition price for college anyway. Lots of people qualify for some amount of financial aid. Now, applying for that aid can be tricky to navigate and possibly discouraging to some prospective students. That's why she says the real news here isn't the expansion of the aid bracket, it's the messaging.
If you really pare into the kind of financial aid policies at many of these schools, they were already doing this. Middle-income students who could get in had a good chance of not having to take on a lot of debt to complete their education because of how generous the institutional aid is. But that wasn't clear to everybody. You wouldn't find out unless you apply. So I think these schools are trying to say, hey, apply, see what you can get.
The money for financial aid typically comes from endowments and targeted fundraising. And whether it's a competitive school like MIT that wants to diversify the socioeconomic profile of its student body, or a small school that needs to stay competitive, they're all looking to get an edge.
One of the schools I spoke to, which was a small private school in Maine, they weren't paying attention to what Princeton was doing. They were paying attention to what UMass was doing. And trying to get the student that would think, well, it's far less expensive for me to go to a public institution like UMass rather than go to your small private liberal. But they're saying, hey, actually, we're cheaper.
Douglas Gabriel told us her prediction, the free tuition trend is likely to continue, though it's a little too early to tell what that means for higher education down the road.
Keep in mind, a lot of these schools admit small numbers of people. So I think the big question is how much impact will these decisions have? Or will they just be at the margins? Or will we see like a total sea change in how the average American is able to afford and pay for college?
When a romantic relationship ends, it can be pretty earth-shattering. For New Yorker reporter Jennifer Wilson, it was a blindside via text, followed soon after by a question from a friend who wanted to know, do you have a breakup plan? What's that? Wilson wondered. She'd just gotten back into the dating pool after her marriage ended, and she told us that question sent her down a rabbit hole.
One click leads to another, and the next thing I knew, I saw this whole universe of resources that did not exist 10 years ago, last time I was single. Back then, if you were going through a breakup, you just sat on the couch, watched sad movies, ate a pint of ice cream.
For centuries, since the days of Aristotle, experts have tried to understand what exactly heartache is, how it manifests in the mind and body, and how to best help people going through it. In 1610, the recommendation from a physician in France was to give people enemas for heartbreak. Today, Wilson says, it looks like
every manner of breakup coach, lots of breakup retreats, breakup getaways. I found this hotel in Mexico that offered a kind of exfoliating treatment where you could scrub away the past.
If you're wondering what a breakup coach does or what happens on a breakup retreat, Wilson says it can vary pretty widely.
When I traveled to Berlin, I met with a woman named Elena Son, who runs something called the Heartbreak Agency. And she had to go through 18 months of training to become certified as kind of an alternative psychological practitioner. And then she passed a test through the German health department.
The breakup mitigation industry, which is a phrase I just made up, is, as you can imagine, full of people who are just making things up. Some claim to be coaches, but really just paid for a certificate. Others come from a vaguely self-helpy background, which is why Wilson says it can be hard to know the quality of a program.
People who are going through breakups are looking for anything that is going to alleviate the pain. And there are lots of people out there willing to offer that kind of quote unquote help, but not all of them are actually helping.
Wilson decided to try a 3-day retreat in the Berkshires, run by a psychotherapy expert. She and dozens of other women going through heartbreak meditated, did yoga, went kayaking, and did writing exercises. And she said she felt better after. A doctor of psychiatry at Columbia who studies these methods told her it's probably because the retreat included therapeutic elements that have been backed by science for a long time, like ritual and structure.
Structure is incredibly healing. Having kind of a designated time where you know where you're going to be, where you know what you have to do, that can really free your mind to focus on the hurt that you're going through.
One psychology expert who runs healing retreats told Wilson, it's just as important not to treat a breakup as something that needs to be rushed past or quickly gotten over. After all, she said, they're a big part of how we make meaning out of our lives. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. A guilty verdict is in the mass rape trial that shocked France and the world. 72-year-old Dominique Pellico has been found guilty of all charges related to the sexual assault of his wife, Gisèle Pellico. And so have all 50 of the other defendants, men enlisted by Dominique to rape his wife, whom he had for years been drugging to be unconscious for these incidents. CNN reports at least one man was found guilty of using Dominique's playbook against his own wife. Dominique Pellico was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Gisèle Pellico left the courtroom quietly. Her bravery in choosing to be publicly named and seen in this trial galvanized campaigners against sexual violence and completely changed the conversation about rape in France. In the U.S., with a looming government shutdown deadline at the end of the week, President-elect Trump came out strongly against a bipartisan stopgap spending bill, effectively killing it before it could reach a vote. The Washington Post reports Trump criticized provisions negotiated by Democrats, like funds to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge that collapsed in Baltimore. Trump also threatened the political futures of Republicans who don't support his stance on the bill, saying they will be primaried. Speaker Mike Johnson will likely need Democratic support to pass any bill. The shutdown deadline is midnight on Friday. In other congressional news, the House Ethics Committee has voted to release its report on former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. The report is the result of a years-long investigation. The allegations against him, which Gaetz has denied, include having sex with underage girls, using illicit drugs, and taking bribes, among others. Gaetz resigned from Congress the same day Trump nominated him to be attorney general, but Gaetz later withdrew his name from consideration, saying his nomination had become a distraction. And finally, an update on the story about the dangers of black plastic spatulas. We talked about this on the show pretty recently. The study said items made with recycled black plastics contained toxic flame retardants linked to health risks like cancer. Now, the authors of that study have issued a correction, saying some of their numbers were off. USA Today reports the researchers misstated the limit set by the EPA for what's a safe level of these chemicals to consume, making it sound like the products that they tested were a lot closer to the limit than they really were. Still, even with the error, these researchers say they stand by their conclusion that you're better off getting rid of black plastics, especially in your kitchen. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've queued up that New Yorker piece on the many ways to deal with breakups to play for you next. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.